You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, Dereds, it's the weekend and you've got me this week, Gareth Roberts. Seems like a massive cast there with me. I've got Joel Sanderson Murray, the world's finest export. I've got Nicola Cornish, Nicky Cornish, hi. I've got Josh Sexton, I've got Ian Ryan, and I've got Paula Murphy. I'm not going to get a fucking word in here. we're going to have a chat about all things Red, as usual, on the weekend. And then in part two, we're doing something that we always do on the Anfield app, which is talking to someone in the community of Liverpool about a good football story. It is a cup of tea show that we've done with Earl Jenkins, who is the chairman of Kingsley United FC in Toxteth. You'll find out all about them when you hear the extract. But it's one of our subscription shows, but we thought it'd be a good one to tag onto the weekend and get out there to see what we're doing. Someone's giving it beans there in the background. What's happening there? Okay, so we're going to start off with what I want to talk about. Loads has gone on, but I'm conscious that, you know, we've given lots of shows and talked about lots of things, and I'm trying to do something a little bit different. So I'm not going to talk about the season just gone again, even though we did win everything and that was sound. And I'm not going to talk about transfer gossip because I've just done that already this morning with Rob Gutman for the Gutter Show. So it's all happening. Now, what I want to talk about to this crew about is getting back to the way we know it and the way we love it, because I think every one of us on this call at some point or another has missed the fact that football hasn't been the way we wanted it to be. So when will we be back? How will we be back? And what will it all look like? Now, I don't know if everyone got this, but I got a survey this week off Liverpool asking me how I felt about being back in the ground, what I wanted it to look like, feel like, who we would go with, how I would get there, what time I would get there, all of these kinds of things. And it really made me realise that, you know, the logistics of getting even some supporters back in the ground is going to be massive. And that's why they're putting these surveys out there. The latest we have on it, really, there's a meeting today of the Premier League where they're going to talk about this among other things. So we'll wait and see what comes out of this. But there was the idea that the Community Shield was going to be used. That now does not look like it's going to be the case, because, you know, they were going to have a crowd in at the snooker, they were going to have a crowd in at the cricket, you know, crowd in at the horse racing and go from there. That's all being kicked into the grass. Community Shield, you guess, has also been kicked into the grass. And what they're talking about now is maybe some pre-season games with a limited crowd. So, yeah, who wants to start? Ian, you look raring to go, lad. I guess, first of all, you know, how have you felt about football now? You've had a bit of time to reflect without us being in the ground. I mean, I seen an interview with Joey Barton, and I know he's very often a gobshite, but he was saying he couldn't be doing basically with football without supporters, and he couldn't wait for them to be back. And he was saying, you know, it's made us all realise how important supporters are to the game.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't not that, I suppose. I think we've all missed it, although I think there's times where you make do, and I feel like I've made do at times. You know, you're kind of watching it, you're consuming all the football on the TV, and people will do it in different ways. Some people will have the sound on and stuff. Personally, that's how I've decided to consume it. And I think it's been okay. You know, you sometimes forget that there's no crowd there, especially if the game's good. I remember watching that City-Chelsea game that obviously ended up giving us the title. And because it was such an engrossing game of football, you almost forgot there was no crowd there. But that said, you absolutely can't wait for the day when you get to walk back into Anfield and get to experience what we've experienced so many times. And I think it's especially hard when you're talking about a football team like ours at the minute, where you just want to see it as much as you possibly can. And we've been deprived of that. And for us, it's come at a time when we were on the cusp of one of the greatest achievements, certainly in recent history. So you feel it almost twice as hard, really, because you've got that taken away from you. And I said we did a betting in show, or a betting out show, because we did it at Paul Senior's Farmers Arms recently, Bobo. And I think we all agreed on that. You know, it's been such a huge part of everyone's life, going the match, seeing the people that you see. That's a big thing for a lot of people. It's not just a game of football that takes place at 3 o'clock or half 12 or whenever it may be. It's the people you get to see on the day. And I think for so many people, it's been a huge part of their lives. And to suddenly not have that, I feel incredibly sorry for some of those people, because everything, and I mean everything, for some people will just centre around match day experience, and it'll centre around Liverpool Football Club, and everything in their working week is geared towards watching the Reds on a weekend or a Wednesday or whatever it may be. And for a long time, that was taken away from us, and it was tough at times. You are wondering whether it'll ever come back, but hopefully there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I know you mentioned there, so some sporting events have kind of been cancelled in respect to maybe getting supporters or fans back in. But it does feel like there's starting to be a little bit of movement. Now, I saw the same survey that you talked about there. I mean, typical Liverpool, I got halfway through and it crashed, you know what I mean? But hey-ho. But hopefully, at some point really soon, we do get that match day experience again.
And Paula, you've got a little bit of a different experience on a regular basis, yeah, really, of how you watch football. I know you get to Anfield when you can, but you know you work abroad, and so you're sort of reliant on getting together with fellow Reds in that situation and watching that way. And we've had a little bit of that over here, obviously with the closed doors football, if you like, and being in pubs and watching it that way. I've quite enjoyed it, to be honest. I really enjoyed the actual day when we got the trophy, because we weren't allowed in the pub then. I know the pub is not for everyone, and some people still want to play safe and things like that, but I enjoyed the community aspect of that. But it is really difficult, this, isn't it? Because, you know, on the one hand, you can see the Bundesliga talking about having fans back in the ground on September the 18th, which really isn't far away. But obviously Germany are way ahead of where the UK is in terms of controlling the virus, and have been from the very start. And it kind of feels like it might come down, or it's starting to come down, certainly in terms of the bigger picture, to what's happening locally. So we've seen Leicester close down and parts of Manchester and all that kind of stuff. But for football, that can't really be the case. Everyone's got to be able to fulfil a fixture, if you like, for the league to be viable, for the league to continue, for the league to run through. So it's a nightmare, isn't it? Logistically, it looks like an absolute nightmare, whatever way you look at this. And, you know, a little Zoom meeting today with a load of bods from the Premier League, I find it unlikely that they're going to resolve it just today.
Yeah, it's really interesting. My thought was, I will go absolutely bananas if they treat football less favourably than they treat other sports which have similar crowd numbers and percentages. I could just foresee the racing fraternity, the cricket fraternity, and in the next few weeks, the rugby fraternity, getting some sort of allowance to be there and football not. And there being this excuse of, oh, well, we treat football less favourably anyway, so let's treat them less favourably now. I mean, as you say, I live in a foreign country. I live in Egypt. So we locked down 12 days earlier than the UK. And we actually had curfews. So we could not be on the road for sort of 12 hours a day for months. The curfew only was lifted, I think, mid-June, late June. I was in the UK then. So I'm actually absolutely staggered by the messages, because I've obviously seen messaging from two countries. I've seen the way it's been interpreted from two countries, and I'm staggered at the constant, you know, change in direction and the way that information is given. So, for instance, the government will say we're doing this, but they haven't told the leaders of councils that that's what they're doing. So that staggers me. But I think it's two things here. I think the reason why it's so problematic is not just because because you can look at a stadium and you can look at seating and you can think, right, well, what we'll do is we'll only allow every, you know, two seats used, two seats not, two seats used. That's doable. That's fine. You could work that through. But it's how you get people in and how you get people out safely. That's the key. Because I'm staggered that pubs are open, but theatres aren't. You know, I go when I'm home in the summer, I always do two Royal Court shows or one Royal Court. I try and do a highbrow one at the Phil and do a Scouse funny one at the Royal Court. And I can't do either. I can't do either, but I can go to the pub. And I don't understand that. I don't understand why that's okay. So I don't know whether they'll go down the route of social distancing. I mean, at some point, they've got to try it. Whether they try it with lower league because the physical numbers are different. But they are going to have to try something like every second turnstile, 2 meter blocks. You wait, it takes you 3 hours to get in the ground. But at some point, they're going to have to sort of break the duck and give it a go. But, you know, it's got all sorts of problems. But you can't go from nothing to 40,000 people. You've got to do it slowly, I think.
Nicky, I know you've been missing it very much. So I've seen you tweeting about it and all that. And, you know, we often bump into each other at Liverpool matches, home and away. So I know how big into the Reds you are. I think what we were just talking about before, about it being a big part of people's lives, it's a big part of your life, isn't it? But also, I wanted to get you on. This isn't exclusive to Liverpool, but it does kind of feel like it is sometimes in our bubble. This is going to be a nightmare. Who do you decide goes in the ground?
Yeah.
If it's only 20% or 30% or whatever, you know, the fellow who runs the ticket for Liverpool, I mean, it's Phil, a fella called Phil, who's a lovely fella. But if he had any air left, he's not going to after this, because how would you decide? You know, you've seen people saying L postcodes. Well, that's you out, Nicky, ta-da. But you know what I mean? There doesn't seem to be a fair way to suddenly decide, you know, only a third of the ground can be in there.
Well, I think you've just got to do a ballot. It's all you can do. They've got the system to do it. They do it for Champions League final tickets, etc. So, you know, you'll have people saying, well, it's not fair. I haven't missed a game for 30, 40 years. Well, yeah. None of it's fair. It's where it is. From my point of view, I would rather, even if it means two of my friends go and I don't, I'd rather them go than none of us.
Yeah.
I think the players, I think the players really want the fans back. So I don't know how you can do it. I mean, how it comes in with member cards and all that, I don't know. But if you're looking purely at season tickets, you have to just do a ballot. And then if you came out for match one, you don't go in the ballot for match two. I believe that's what Tottenham have already told their fans they're going to do. Right. So I heard, but I think that's the only way you can do it. And we've all got to be adult about it. People can't throw their toys out of the pram. What else can the club do?
Have you thrown your toys out the pram at any point so far? Just because you've been missing it so much?
No, in fact, I have really been missing it. But I think because I see no one else going as well, it's not been as bad as I thought it would be. Mm. So the friends I go with, we've watched every game with us all on Zoom. So we comment on it all through the game. For the trophy lift night, I had 6 friends around. We watched it in the garden. We're drinking champagne till 4 in the morning. And to be honest, it was nearly as great as had I been there. I couldn't believe I could have enjoyed it that much without being in the ground. So just want to get back as soon as possible. I'll wear a mask, whatever, I don't mind.
But tell you what, next home game, all Scouse to Nicky's house. Josh, I mean, the other thing about this as well, when we're thinking about it from the Liverpool aspect, because we're the Liverpool podcast, so why wouldn't we be, is, you know, when I said before that a lot of this stuff, you know, you get people talking nationally about it, you get people talking about bigger pictures, but then it will all be boiled back down to what the situation is locally. Now, it is, for want of a better phrase, a bit shit in terms of getting to Anfield and getting away from Anfield at the best of times. And, you know, the saying here that, you know, transport has to be a consideration. And on that survey that they sent out, they were saying things like, how do you get there? Who do you travel with? Do you get the train? Do you get the bus? Do you park up? All of those kind of things. Seems to me that they're going to have to think about solutions that suit the situation. So that may well be, I know that they impose a zone around the ground where you can't park, for instance. But, you know, in this instance, there's an argument to say it's going to be safer to drive than it is to go on public transport and things like that. So there's going to have to be a big think, and there's going to have to be a big think about how it's going to work locally and logistically for Anfield.
Yeah, and when I first sort of heard about the idea of there being a reduced crowd in, I was almost thinking, oh God, it's going to come back to the argument between season ticket holders and members again. And I'm a member, and I was sort of thinking, well, you know what? I'd quite happily see that responsibility to season ticket holders, because look, it's going to be nice when we can be back in the ground. But at the same time, if they've got to put certain measures in place, then I don't sort of mind. Like I'm not going to kick up a fuss if a season ticket holder gets priority over me. It's the first I've heard in terms of being an L postcode, with you mentioning it there, which I think almost, to be honest, makes sense because of the transport restrictions you're talking about. And I know there's going to be people, look, I don't live in Liverpool anymore. I've had to get rid of my place recently. So it doesn't suit me to say that, oh, it should be people with an L postcode. But in terms of the transport, you know, I've been on trains coming from Manchester to Liverpool when it's a match day and there's fans on there. I've been from trains going from London to Old Trafford when it's a match day. I've been from trains going from Manchester to London when it's an Arsenal game and things like that. And there's football fans on those trains. And that's, for them fans, it's the quickest way to get cross-country to be able to go to those games. So if you're talking about what's the way we can do this with reducing the risk of spreading it as much as you can, well, if somebody's coming from Greater Manchester where there's a lockdown and is being allowed to go to a game at Anfield where, you know, there's not a lockdown, but they're coming out of lockdown to go there, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me, really. And that's why I sort of think the L postcode thing is maybe the way to go. And like I say, it sort of comes with a heavy heart that I say that, because I'm not in an L postcode at the moment. So it wouldn't suit me. But I've quite enjoyed, like you, Rob, I've quite enjoyed the sort of experience of going to the pub and watching it with your mates. And maybe that's because, you know, for so long we were locked in the house. And it's just sort of nice to have that luxury beyond this point. But I'm quite sort of aware of the fact that, you know, it might be a while before I'm back in Anfield. It might be a while before I sort of get to watch this team live in the flesh again. But I've got no doubt that whoever they let in is going to be an amazing experience to sort of just see any fans back in the ground, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to be clear as well, before everyone starts furiously pounding at the keyboards, the L postcode thing is very much just something that's being floated on the internet and hasn't come from anyone at the club and isn't coming from anyone at the Anfield app. So just simmer down. Joe, a little disclaimer there, my own sanity. Joe, the other thing that comes to mind about all this is that, you know, we all love being in a ground together, celebrating a goal, jumping all over each other, falling over seats, or maybe not that bit, and I'd love safe standing, but that's for another day. But how are they going to make sure that there's social distancing in a ground is a big question, isn't it? Because it's not just about when you're in the seats and when you're in position watching the game. It's the concourses, it's the food, it's the drink. There was quite, again, you can sort of second guess the thinking, because on that survey, again, it was saying, do you buy drinks in the ground? Yeah. Do you buy food in the ground? All that kind of stuff. So that, again, it's a consideration of how would they do it? And they're talking about sort of staggering times that people arrive and staggering times that people leave. There's been mention as well about other games being screened inside the ground to encourage you to watch that maybe before or after, and, you know, again, to control the surge of people that would leave the ground. But ultimately, that's going to be really difficult, isn't it? Without, say, you know, some huge amount of police there or something, you know, ultimately, you can't sort of bend people's will, because we've seen already, you know, with the best will in the world, people will do to an extent what they want to do. People view the virus situation in different ways, depending on their age, depending on their family situation, all kinds of reasons which we haven't got time to get into here. But I'm just interested in those logistics and what you know of being a footy fan, what it's like being in a ground, and then the idea of, you know, there's all these taped off seats and you've got to wave to a fella a couple of seats away to say, good goal, I want it, lad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if anyone's seen the plans for the Bundesliga for them bringing fans back. There's a piece on The Athletic about it, and the provisional plans at the moment would be to have no alcohol in the stadium, which of course is case in the UK anyway. But it's also a lot of the Bundesliga stadiums and stadiums in Germany have safe standing, but they'd be scrapping that, or at least restricting that completely for when it comes back. So you would have to be seated. So that, you know, I think it kind of looks like it'll be so strange when you first go back in, when you're allowed to first go back in, because you're also talking about not being able to chant, not being allowed to chant. Now, I'm not sure how many people will stick to that when it comes to it. But obviously, there's a threat there. If you are chatting, you are letting loose of saliva and all your fluids, which, you know, heightens the risk of the virus. But that sounds really dystopian to me. And I wonder, I don't know if anyone saw the PSG Saint Etienne game, the Coupe de France final. It was on last Friday, and they played it at the Stade de France. But they had all the fans, there were 5,000 fans let in, and they had them all in one area, which I thought was really weird, because the rest of the stadium was empty. They had them all in one area, and obviously the seats were, you know, they weren't all next to each other in seats, but they were all still enclosed in one area. It did make a difference to the atmosphere, because there was cheering when they were scoring, not playing Blur Song 2 when, you know, a goal hits the back of the net. So it did make a bit of a difference. But again, referring back to the Bundesliga, they released a little list of the amount of capacity they'll let into certain stadiums. So the highest would be here to Berlin's, which is like an 80,000 seat stadium. They would only be letting in 36,000. And if you look lower down, you know, you get into Union Berlin, allowed 4,000 in. Because it's also a state of the concourses and how big your concourse is. So I think that's where it comes into it, is I think that might be a big, big factor. Now, if you go to like somewhere like Goodison, you might not be able to get so many in because the concourse isn't great, which, you know, sad times, isn't it? But I think that's going to be a really big determining factor, is how big your concourses are. It's literally the restrictions of getting people in and out.
Yeah. I mean, another thing they're talking about in Germany as well is no away fans as well, which, you know, kind of what Josh was talking about sort of makes sense on the surface in terms of travel and things like that. But all of it really is a massive we shall see. I think everyone, to an extent, even at the very top of governments and the top of football organisations and everyone else, is to an extent winging all this because it's never happened before. Joel, you're sticking your hand up. Got something else to say there, lad?
There's just one thing with the sort of the way the Bundesliga brought football back. I wonder whether it's, and everyone sort of looked at how they did it and implemented it themselves. I wonder whether it's, you know, the Premier League and the rest of the Europe will look at how they do it and then copy it from there and they showed away. But there's one thing worried about the Liverpool-Wirral, you know, relationship is going to take some battering over the next couple of months. You know, I might have to head up a Wool Ultras group, to be honest, mate.
Get you in, mate. Get you in. You can improve relations between the sides of the river. A couple of other bits of business then to talk about on the weekend of this week. As I said, I've tried to swerve away from a lot of the stuff that I know we're doing on other shows. I'm going to do this one because there's a couple of people on the call that I know will definitely have views on it. A, because I've seen one of them tweet about it, and B, someone's got, because another person on the call has got actual skin in the game, really, on this one. So basically, Netflix are bringing out, or have brought out, a new documentary called Anelka Misunderstood. It looks good. Can't wait to get stuck in. We may well do it as a find and a footy fix or something like that further down the line. But just the immediate reaction, it came out yesterday. They showed a clip of Nicholas looking smooth AF, to be fair. But he was basically saying, you know, he says, it was tragic for me. Honestly, it's a club where I think I could have done a lot of things, great things. Talking about, of course, that he didn't get the permanent move to Liverpool. And like, you can see that he means it. There's no two ways about it. It's not spin, and it's not the first time he said it. Is it, Josh?
No, so we did an interview with Anelka probably ought to be about 2 or 3 years ago now. We actually re-released it during the lockdown as well, so I'm sure it's not too hard to find if people want to go searching for that. But you can sort of tell, you can tell in the interview we did with him, and you can tell in the video you mentioned from Netflix sort of clips that have been coming out, that Liverpool did mean and does mean a lot to him. And even during that sort of short time he was there, you could tell that he really wanted that move. And I think it's all a bit sort of, you know, there's different stories and rumours about how things didn't come to fruition, and there's all sorts of smoke and mirrors. And you actually wrote in your piece the other day, Robbo, about the sort of culture at the club, the way it is now and the way it's not been there in the past. And that Anelka sort of saga just reminds me of a time where the club culture wasn't there. And it's not the sort of mistake that that I think Liverpool Football Club would make now, and they wouldn't be able to have a player coming out and saying that, you know, this was sort of, well, I think Anelka blames a bit of, you know, Hulier and maybe a few other people at the club at the time for the fact that the move fell through. I know there's talk about his brothers being involved and stuff around his agent and things like that. And look, you don't know what to believe at the end of the day, like I've said, but I think the way the club is now, it does make you quite thankful, because they're not going to make those sort of same mistakes around transfers now. If there's a player who the club are letting go of or letting go to another club or whatever, you believe the reasons they're doing it, and you don't sit around for age going, oh, what if we did sign Nicholas Anelka instead of, you know, El Hadjiouf, and then he turned out to be the major prick that he was. So it does make you sort of think, what if? And I'm sure that, look, I wasn't really old enough to remember Anelka being at Liverpool, but from what I've seen of his days at Chelsea and his years in the Premier League sort of after that, I'm fully aware that he'd have been a very good player for Liverpool. And if he loved the club as much as he says he does, then he might have been there for years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ian, it was you that I seen tweeting about it. You're still fuming after all these years that we didn't get the great man, and that instead we got some Blair to spits at people in the crowd and is just a general bell and is the only number nine in Liverpool history who went a season without scoring. I think that's right. And obviously, you know, every now and again decides to have another go at Gerrard or Carragher. But yeah, it's one of them as well, isn't it? I think, you know, I always say when we talk about this particular issue that, you know, people in football and people in life generally like to sort of airbrush situations so it makes themselves look a little bit better. And I've got to say, like, for everything that Hulé and Thompson did for the club, I kind of feel their version of events around this doesn't quite sit right.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think, I mean, yeah, I do struggle to let things go. And this one is still one that's a bit of a kick in the balls, I have to say. And I just at the time, Robbo, I think I might have put it in the tweet, but I remember just being so, so excited when we signed him, because you'd already got a little glimpse of him at Arsenal, and he was the absolute business at Arsenal, wasn't he? And obviously, the Real Madrid thing happens, and it doesn't quite work for Real Madrid, but there's lots of good footballers who go to Real Madrid, and he can't quite make it work. But to have that kind of, I think January 2002 he comes, to have those few months, you almost felt on the back of some really strong displays, why wouldn't Liverpool pull the trigger on this deal? Because it made all the sense in the world. I mean, we had good forward options at the time, but he was just another one who was slightly different. And I think as you see him progress through his career, you see what a brilliant footballer is. Now, he goes on to Man City and does pretty well. You know, his goal to games record's pretty good. But at Chelsea, and I know he has spells in between, he ends up playing with Bolton, Fenerbahce. He's a bit of a mad footballer at the clubs he's had. But at Chelsea, you see what a brilliant footballer he is. You know, he's got the ability to play right at the top, but he can go wide. And he's got that ability to drop in. He's that intelligent. He's that good a footballer. And it just feels like like one that got away, huge missed opportunity. I mean, I think someone replied to my tweet, you know, in terms of the end for Hulier, it felt like a maybe the start of that, to be honest. It was a big, big mistake at the time. And we've all heard the spin from Hulier and Thompson. I like them both, by the way, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Not for us. There's no doubt about it. And people make mistakes, and sometimes you don't get the ones you want over the line, and they may have a version on it. Well, we know they've got a version on it, why it didn't happen, and Elka's brothers. And maybe there's a little bit of something in that. But I don't see why Anelka now has got any reason to lie about it, to be honest. I think it's quite clear from the clips I've seen. I'm going to go watch it, by the way. It looked good.
Yeah.
There was a desperation. There was a desire from the player to come and play for this football club. And that's where it sticks in the throat a little bit. And then when you think about who came in instead of Anelka, and you've just touched on it there. I mean, when you talk about players you've pulled on the shirt, you'd have to go pretty deep to find one that is probably disliked more than El Hadjiouf. I mean, everything about the lad just didn't sit right, did it? And, you know, he's had his beef with Carragher and Gerrard, etc. Just a huge mistake. And I bet you if Hulé and Thompson are honest with themselves now and kind of, you know, digging deep and looking at this situation again, you know, hand on heart, surely they're thinking, my God, that's what we should have made happen. And if it did, you know, that sliding doors thing, you know, what would it have looked like for those, for the club and for Thompson and Hulé moving forward? Because it's not that long after that maybe things start to go a little bit downhill.
Yeah, and Nicky, I think there's a bit of revisionism among Reds, that sort of, you know, and look, there's nothing wrong with this. People support in different ways. People see things in different ways. But I kind of think, I see some people in a different camp on an Elfa where they say, well, you know, didn't exactly rip it up for Liverpool. And he, you know, only scored a handful of goals. But as Ian mentioned, like, it wasn't just, you know, things aren't just measured in goals. You know, when he put in a performance against Newcastle where, you know, he's absolutely superb. There's other performances there as well where, you know, okay, he's not getting goals, but he's causing defences problems. He's ripping it up. And I think the other stuff around that as well is this reputation that he carried of being a troublemaker, you know, being lusulk and all that kind of stuff. You know, Gerrard came out a few times and I said he was actually sound. No one had beef with him on the training ground. No one had beef with him in the dressing room. And you know, this is where Anelka himself is a bit like, I don't really know what I had to do to get the move. And when you look back, just that Premier League goals, by the way. So Ian mentions Arsenal. I mean, the season before, or the time he's in the Premier League before he comes to Liverpool, he's with his final season at Arsenal, 17 Premier League goals there. After Liverpool, he scores 14 Premier League goals in a season for City, and then 16 in a different season for City. Goes down to 7, but it's off less appearances. 11 in a season and 10 in a season for Bolton, who, you know, with the best will in the world, weren't the greatest football team. 19 Premier League goals for Chelsea in 08-09. Mm. I mean, that would have been all right for Liverpool, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, it certainly would have been. And to be honest, that's so many years ago. I'm scratching my memory. Well, I obviously remember watching Anelka play because I've been going for about 25 years. But yeah, he was really exciting. And I think in a way, sometimes I wonder if we almost have an even better opinion of him now because we're kind of comparing him with Diouf, who came after him, who, as you said, was probably the most, I literally can't think of anyone that's more hated, certainly after he left. I mean, I was in the ground that night, I saw him spit at that child. I mean, he's just hideous. So, yeah, I mean, definitely an Elko. I mean, he was an exciting player to watch, wasn't he? So it does feel like he was the one that got away there. Bad decision, really.
Yeah, Paula, I heard that you had a Diouf shirt. Is that right? Yeah,
absolutely not. Come on, Gan, you know me better than that. No, I think you know. You know that I follow a lot of sports. I'm a PE teacher. I'm always, and I myself as a kid played county badminton, and I can remember in the, you know, the sort of 2000, 2004, 2008 Olympics, following like badminton. And it used to stagger me that to get in the England badminton team, you would have to take a psychometric test. And the badminton team was like an amateur sport. And yet we were spending millions on any numpty, not doing any sort of background checking and wondering why it was going pitong. And it used to stagger me the number of variables that happened in football that we never used to close down. And we used to wonder why there was no relationship between a certain player and the manager. You know, there were things going on in the background. And I think those of us who've been watching it for a long time can really see just what Klopp has done to close all them loops. There's so many variables that he has now stopped from happening to the point where we are managing almost everything about the background of the football, which is why I'm not losing my head as much as I used to on transfers. Because I trust is, you know, we're looking at players' propensity for injury. Well, are they getting soft tissue injury? Are they getting hard tissue injury? We're going, and, you know, I think in a different time with a different combination of manager and people at the back, we'd have bought him. And hopefully he's one of those mistakes that we learn from. And it's just one of them.
Yeah, Joel, it feels sometimes with some players that, and you know, clubs should definitely take advantage of this, that they do feel, for whatever reason, like an emotional connection to certain clubs and not others. Like, you're not telling me, I mean, I haven't watched this Anelka thing yet, but I can't imagine with the doing half an hour on how much he loved Bolton. Do you know what I mean? whereas, you know, I think that's what adds to the frustration around him, is that, you know, he's talked so well, including to Josh, about how much he wanted this deal. And he could just leave it, by the way. You know, he's all right. He won the Golden Boot. He's won Premier Leagues. He's played for Real Madrid. You know, he moved on and did fine. And he's a millionaire and he's got a big house and everything's okay. But the very fact he himself keeps coming back to it as a regret in his career, as a whole there, says to me, you know, we definitely could have got something out of him.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because you know, he also played for Arsenal and Real Madrid before us. And I remember being at the time, because I was a kid who still had posters on the wall of Liverpool players at the time and being fascinated by the idea of signing him. Because it was kind of sexy, because it was kind of like getting Marcus Babbel, because you're getting someone from a top European club and he's coming to Liverpool, and it didn't really happen that much at that time. And I remember the sound about Anelka at the time being that he just, you know, he's got all the skill and all the quality, just hadn't found his home. And I think he had found his home at Liverpool, and the sounds he's made to Josh in his documentary, I think that backs that up. It reminds me a bit of what you just saying there, reminds me a bit of Fernando Torres' career, actually, because, you know, you could tell he loved it at Liverpool, as everyone well knows, and how happy he was. But he just wanted to further his ambitions to win trophies, and he's gone on to win everything a player could have won. But you hear sounds and interviews Torres does now that he maybe didn't enjoy it as much as he thought he would, because he didn't do it at Liverpool, he didn't do it at Atletico Madrid, because he didn't do it at the club he loved. He just won trophies for Chelsea, but maybe just wasn't completely right. And I wonder whether, I think he linked that to Anelka. I wonder whether he's gone on and done amazing things, won Premier Leagues and Golden Boots, but it wasn't completely 100% right, because he didn't have his heart in it like he would have done at Liverpool, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's one to watch, certainly. And another one to watch this weekend, I just wanted to mention briefly, is a documentary on BBC Two on Sunday, 10 o'clock. It's called The Australian Dream. It's a documentary. It's sort of documentary film. And it's about Adam Goods, who's an Australian Football League legend. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know anything about the AFL until I watched this. But it's an absolutely brilliant documentary about racism in sport, about the situation in society. Yeah. It is based around Australia, of course, but it's one of them where you watch it and it makes you think about the situation around the world in general. And it is directed by Dan Gordon, who you may recognise the name as being the director of the Hillsborough documentary in 2014, the BAFTA award-winning documentary called Hillsborough in 2014. I was fortunate enough to interview Dan, and that's coming soon on A Cup of Tea. I'm not quite sure when that's going out, but I just wanted to give you a heads up to watch that documentary this weekend on BBC Two, or catch it on the iPlayer afterwards, as it is absolutely brilliant and really thought-provoking. And Dan is a top fella as well. Look out for that one. Just before we go, just wanted to finish up with you all. There doesn't have to be absolutely, you know, Nelson Mandela speeches on this. But the kit's come out. The kit resides in my living room right now. I can see it to my right. What do we all make of the kit? Because the kit has caused all kinds on social media, and people keep saying, stop referencing social media. I mean, it's quite prevalent in life, especially when you're doing what we're doing. So I haven't got involved. I think it's all right. It's sound. I'm not wearing it. Paula, the new kit.
Well, I think I tweeted a couple of days ago that my opinion of the kit is about as valid as my opinion of Harvey's Elliot's hair. You know, it's not me demographic. The shade of red took me by surprise, but it is one of them where I've looked at it again this morning and I quite like it. So I think, you know, apparently Harvey said when he scores his first goal, he's getting his hair cut, and he's not getting it cut till then. So yeah, it surprised me, the shade of red. That was all. The teal I can live with, but yeah, it surprised me, the shade of red. But yeah, it's a kit. We're going to wear it. We're going to win. We're boss. Whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll win whatever we're wearing. Yeah. Put a bin bag on these boys and we're going to win. Okay, if we're saying demographic, Josh then, is it fire?
I think you have to say it like Van Dijk if you're going to say it's fire, don't you?
Fire,
swoosh. to be honest, I've just seen it for the first time in the flesh, that we've got a couple here, obviously, from the sort of thing we've been doing with Nike and delivering them to kids in the community who've been sort of deserving of them. And I've just seen one out of the box there. And the shade of red's not as bad as you think. Like I've seen it in pictures. I've seen it on LeBron James last night, which really, really entertained me. Because obviously I'm a big basketball fan and stuff like that, but it's not as bad as you think it is, the shade of red. And I think one of the issues that people had when obviously Nike became our kit supplier was that, oh, we're going to have these template kits. Why are you asked about a template kit? It's red. You don't get a trophy for having a more unique kit. The reason that we had unique kits when we had Warrior and New Balance is because they didn't fucking make them for anyone else because they couldn't pay enough for all the top clubs. We've got a top kit supplier now. One of the top club. Well, we are the top club in Europe. We're the top club in the world as well. So just get on with it. It's red and we'll win trophies, isn't it?
Sean, Joel, fire. Fire.
Not doing that. I haven't got the torso to wear football kit, so it's none of my business anymore. I really don't care. As you know, if we win trophies in it, everyone will think it looks nice then. It's none of my business. You know,
are you not gonna get the Granada reports to wear on the beach, no?
Absolutely not.
So you're just all right with it, are you, mate? Like I say, you don't have to give a big speech. You sound with it, are you? Yeah.
Sorry, have we gone to Ian then? No. I really don't care. I don't care what you wear. The one we wore, we won the Champions League, wasn't that nice? And that was kind of heart, purple, jammy, tart kind of colour. And we still won a trophy in it, and no one would care. You know, it reminds me of 93 a bit too much. That's the only grievance I got with it. But other than that, who gives a shit?
Okay. And Ian, Kit.
Lad, I'm disappointed you're not wearing your free one on this show right now, to be honest with you.
I think it's going to be exclusively in the flat, that. Because, like, very naughty ground being 44 and rocking around with it. As far as I'm concerned, if that's for you, that's for you. Sound, I'm not judging you. But in my own world, like, if my mate saw me with that on, lad... Nah.
I've seen a load of like middle-aged fellas having a pop at other middle-aged fellas for getting free kits. It's been amusing, I have to say. But I mean, as Joel said, I mean, I think when you get to a certain age, I mean, the way they make the kits, I mean, it looks like a snug fit. It looks like a real tight fit. And unless, I don't know, maybe kind of less than 10% body fat, I wouldn't be going anywhere near it, to be honest with you. It's not going to look particularly great. Yeah, I'm with you, Rob. I don't buy them. It's not really for me, so I've not really felt the need to get involved in the conversation, to be honest. It's red. I agree with Josh. I think someone put a comparison up of the kit with another kit, and I don't think it's quite as light as you think. It's all right. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the other kits, the away one and the third one. I don't particularly think they're great, but listen, as I say, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. It's not really any of my business. And as I say, as long as the boys are winning football matches in it, yeah, that'll do for me.
Sad. And Nicky, last of all, then, what's your take on the kit?
Well, I certainly don't wear kits, and I've really got no interest in it neither. And what makes me laugh, as Ian said, is just grown men just losing their shit on Twitter about a kit and who's got a free kit and they can't get their kit. The only thing I thought was, I wasn't wild on the stripe down the side to start with, but I've seen the skipper and I've seen Virgil modelling it on Instagram, and to be honest, they look like brilliant champions to me, so great.
Okay, big thanks to everyone on the panel today. Good laugh, really enjoyed that one. As promised at the start of the show then, coming up after this, we have got Earl Jenkins, the chairman of Kingsley United FC. He spoke to Andy Heaton about the football club. It's based in Toxteth. It's a great little club. Earl's done a great job there. He's well known in and around Liverpool for being a great fella. I think you'll think the same after you've listened to this. Here it is.
It's Neil Atkinson and John Gibbons chatting about Beer 52. And John, you'll never guess what happened 5 minutes before we started this Zoom.
It never. Did it arrive?
There's one. Some Trappist to carry on.
This is almost like we planned it, and yeah. I can assure everyone we're not that good.
We're really not that good. This is the Bocklul, which looks fantastic. It's got some sort of centaur sort of thing with windows getting cleaned here tonight. That's weird, isn't it? all going ours.
He's like, that ladder there starts early.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting onto all sorts. We have got this gear, the tie-tie. 8% the tie-tie.
Oh, lively. So it's not a morning beer.
No, I've got me. It's not a morning beer. This is me Friday night, sort of, when we're on hot mic game. So this is some North Sea IPA. So it's fantastic. The beer 52 is coming through for me right here. Honestly, you can look at the box, John. You can see the people that it's there.
Confirmed, fresh out the box, and as lively as ever. I do like the aesthetic of the bottles they send, and I know they obviously focus on the contents. The people at beer 52, but I do like a nice bit of design work. And you always get some wonderful looking stuff, and I could see from those brief glimpses. And there in your hand is Ferment magazine.
Yep, which I've read more of than I would have if you'd have offered me that guarantee back in March. I have read more of these than you'd have thought.
Focused on the Netherlands there.
Yeah, very much focused on the Netherlands. There's a lot here. This is called Man and Leiderfelder, which is made with. Made with love and lemongrass. I reckon one of those ingredients is a bit more practical than the other, but we'll see how we get on.
Okay, while Neil's looking through his making noises, while Neil peruses his lovely, lovely post, I'll just say that basically if you want to get involved with Beer 52, you get 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet for free. All you do is need to go to beer52.com/wrap and just cover the $5.99 for postage, and that will get you set up. It is a membership club, but you're free to leave at any point. But your first box is free. All you have to do is pay that $5.95 postage, and again it's beer52.com/wrap. There's over 150,000 members now getting a brand new case every month, including Mr. Neil Atkinson, who is a paid up member. And look, what you can hear is excitement in his voice.
Excellent. No, genuinely, I mean, you know, you've just had me live the product live. I just brought it up here now. No, I am a paid up member, like literally with my own money. This isn't like, oh, they send us them just for the Anfield wrap. We pulled that trick, I think, 3 times.
Yeah,
it wasn't sustainable to continue. to be honest with you, so now I literally, like, the money leaves my account for this, so that should in and of itself be an endorsement. So yeah, I'm paying for the beer 52. I enjoy the beer 52. I'm always pleased when it comes. I always feel, if you want, you know, a little bit of a nose, I always feel like it's not enough. But then what's the fella from Hermes meant to do? What, turn up to ours with 36 cans? That feels a bit crackers. So, well, 36 bottles, these are all bottles this time out. So no, we're very in, and I enjoy it hugely.
Okay, so yeah, the website address again, beer52.com/wrap. Get your first 8 beers for just $5.95, and you could be as happy as Mr. Neil Atkinson.
It's a cup of tea show. I'm delighted to be joined for a kind of a special cup of tea by Earl Jenkins, who, for those of you who don't know, is chairman of Kingsley United. Earl is an old friend of mine, and we've got him in to talk about, well, just what Kingsley United are about, Tiber, and what's going on in Toxteth, and some exciting developments for the future.
Indeed, yeah. You okay, Anne?
Yeah, good, mate. So, I mean, I've been wanting to get you in for a while anyway, just talk about your youth work, because we've known each other for a while now, and I know how passionate, you know, you are about youth football. And, you know, if you just want to kind of tell, I mean, a lot of people on the Liverpool football scene know who you are, but maybe outside of Liverpool, maybe they might not. So do you want to kind of explain, I don't know where the logical point really to start is from the beginning. So do you really want to explain how you got into youth football and the reasons and the roots behind it?
Yeah. So it starts off a long time ago, 20 or more years ago. And I'd just come back from Africa, Namibia, working with Rally International. So the work over there was, you know, supporting communities over there and stuff. And while I was over there, I was like, this is brilliant, this. And it made me think a little bit about what I was doing in my own community kind of thing, because at that time I was a postman, just going to work, doing my thing and that. And I thought to myself, you know what, I want to be able to give a little bit more back at home as well. So I come back and I started speaking to a few people in youth work and what have you. And I basically put myself out there for some voluntary work. In the meantime, I was going with a girl at the time whose brother was needing something to do with his time. He was getting a little bit caught up in nonsense. So we went to a barbecue, like a friend's barbecue, and Howard Gale was there, and he was talking about the football and stuff, and we were talking, and I was telling them about the lad, and anyway, what happened was Howard said, well, look, bring him down, see if we can make something of him. So took him down to Stanley House at the time. Was there for a few weeks, maybe a couple of months or something, just watching the training and stuff like that. And like I've never played footy myself, really, anything to speak about. So what I did was, what happened was someone kind of left the team, and Howard said, look, there's an opening there if you want to get involved. And I'd been thinking about different ways, as I say, of getting involved and supporting the community and stuff. I'd started doing a little bit of detached youth work, but I thought, you know what, seeing how many kids were there at them sessions and how it was grabbing them and that, I said, you know what, yeah, I'll get involved a bit. So I spent about 2 or 3 years at Stanley House. I think it was about 2 or 3 years running one of the teams and stuff. And it sort of changed, and me and Howard had like a bit of a difference of opinion on how things went. And so I said, you know what, with Howard, he's strong-minded, and he wanted the way to go the way he wanted to go. And it wasn't my thing, so I said, look, you know, okay, then we'll kind of call it quits. So every week the team trained at the bottom of my street in the old Toxic Sports Centre, and I remember walking across to go to the shop on Windsor Street. Used to just walk across because it was quicker. And as I was crossing over, a couple of the kids who I'd been training in the past sort of like started chanting my name and that. And I was like, oh, wow. And it's kind of wounded me. So I felt like, oh, you know what? I've left that and maybe I shouldn't have. So I thought about it a little bit more and I said, well, you know what? If there's kids there that still want to do the footy, There's enough space for another club within the area, and kids should have the choice. So I kind of started off on my own. I went and spoke to Aubrey Rogers, who's kind of like always been involved in footy and was always like sort of someone who I knew around the way. And I knew that he knew his footy. So I spoke to him, just bumped into him, spoke to him, said, told him what my plan was and stuff. And he said, yeah, he's willing to get involved. So me and Aubrey started off. I think he was on the sort of back end of stuff with Howard as well. But anyway, we started off a club and we called it Tiber FC because I spoke to another lad from the area who again, I think he's in like folklore in Toxteth for playing, a fella called Smiler. And I was looking for somewhere to play because there was no real pitches around. And he advised me to look at Tiber Street School. So that was where the name Tiber came from, the fact that we were always going to train on Tiber. We got there and it was like a big open field. And they only used it. We approached them and said, look, can we use it? And they only used it for sports day. So I approached them, said, look, we want to start off a team. They said, well, look, as long as the pitch is in, the grass was in good nick for when they do their sports day once a year, they didn't mind. They basically said, you do the upkeep of it. So I said, yeah, we agreed to it. And then we kind of started off from there. And that's basically how Tiber was born from that point.
So, I mean, from where it all started, I mean, just to give people who are listening an idea of the scale of it, I mean, how many people, how many teams at any one time have you had running? I mean, how many kids have you been looking after at any one given point?
You know what? We started off with, like, I think it was like two teams, I think it was. And we've kind of built every year and backfilled and whatever. And we've grown and we've took backward steps when a coach hasn't been able to carry on with his commitments and stuff like that. But I think for the last, what, 3 or 4 years, it just keeps on growing to the point that, like, we've got about 160, 170 kids. I'd say somewhere between 160 and 180 kids that come and get involved every week. And we've got like 12 between 12 and 14 teams. We start off at like 4 and 5 year olds, and we're currently the oldest team that we've got at the minute is an under 17 team that will probably play at under 18s. In the past, we've had a little go at running adult teams and things like that, but I've sort of concentrated, and I feel that we're best served with the younger age groups.
You talk about best served, and I know you're passionate about this, and an awful lot. I mean, for me at least, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but when you read about the effect of football and papers do, and they try hard and they try to like put a bit of colour into it and a bit of meat into it, but they don't really get into you know, the societal benefits and the actual change that it can, and the transformative effect it can have on some of these kids. I mean, you can be as frank as you want. I mean, how important do you think schemes and teams and initiatives like this can be, especially when, and we've talked specifically around Tyburn and LA, you know, from your experiences, what have you seen? What can you tell us?
Well, I know for a fact that we haven't saved everyone, and you can't save everyone, and that's probably something I learned within about the first 5 or 6 years. As hard to take as that was, there are still kids out there that are on a path that you can't really get them off. But I mean, if you think that we've dealt with at least 100 kids every year, and I think football is a great thing for leisure, but for me, it's never just been about leisure. I've wanted to make sure that we use the football in a way that supports these kids and shows them a path out of the neighbourhood and raises their aspirations, really. And as I say, the people who I looked to in the past for doing this very successfully were the likes of Henry Mooney at the Toxteth Tigers. All his kids that he got involved, they were looking at scholarships in America, so they always had high aspirations. And I used to look at them and I used to think, they're kids like ours, but they just seem a bit more polished. So for me, it's like, the effect that Henry had on the kids was to really, he really grabbed them along and sold them the dream that was achievable. He wasn't lying to the kids, because you can't kid the kids themselves. So I've always seen what we do as, it's like a thin line. And if you look, like, he had a strap line, Henry, with the Toxteth Tigers. And so I always looked and thought, should we have one? And the one for me was, like, if you picture, like, a penalty area and you look at, the line and you say to yourself, like, because it's a thin line, because for us in our area where we are, the football, it is a thin line, you know, between which way a kid can go in life. And so that's always been my motivating factor, really, is to not just create footballers, but to create good citizens and... good citizens. I don't know how you would look at that.
Okay, all right, let me flip this on there, because I know you're kind of reluctant sometimes to big up what you do, because it seems you don't want to big yourself up. But one of the most humble men I know. Let's flip this on the head a little bit. You talk about the Toxteth Tigers and Tyburn and Kingsley. What does it look like? And let's not pretend everything's perfect, but what does it look like if initiatives like that aren't there?
If you look across the city now and you look at areas that were similar to ours when we started, and I'm not like talking any other areas down, but there are similar areas in terms of the amount of, if you were on something like free school meals and poverty and things like that, similar areas, if you took away what we had, I think you would end up with areas in the city where there's a higher crime rate now. So for instance, one of the things that I do is I speak with the police, because I obviously want to speak on behalf of young people and I want to get their views across, and when there are issues in the area, I speak to the police. Now, if you look at just one thing, and I always look at bonfire night, every, you know, mischief night and all that kind of thing, if you look at the figures in our area now, they're down, and we do work towards them. Do you know what I mean? We work towards speaking to our kids and educating them on stuff like that. And so I think, look, the crime rate would be a lot higher in our area, and there would be a lot more people involved in gangs and things like that in our area if we weren't around. And I've seen them groups existing, and I've seen how it's gone over the last few years, but I'm telling you now, I know for a fact, and the police would probably bear you out now, because after years of trying to, like, show them what we do, then now, you know, the local police in our area now have got a lot of respect for what we do, to the point where they've sort of, like, got behind initiatives for us.
So, just keeping on that a little bit, because there's all misconceptions and the public perception, and a lot of people might think that these things are just on a wing and a prayer and goodwill and stardust. And I mean, to bring it throughout to the current climate, but, you know, clap for the NHS, instead of funding it properly, everyone thinks, oh, if we clap for the NHS, everyone will be brilliant. But these things do actually need funding. They do cost money, and there is a significant cost to keeping these things going. And it's from since I've known you, it's always been a constant struggle.
It has, but it's always been one that I... You see, the thing is like you see different clubs starting up and you know around different areas and that and they do well and they're thriving and stuff like that. But they can come from areas where parents can afford to pay for the service.
Well, it's not. I mean, I'll just call it what it is. It's not like there's a team set up in Crosby.
Yeah.
And that isn't denigrating Crosby or slagging it off, but if in a more affluent area, if we can be perfectly honest about it, is that kind of...
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, in a roundabout way, is that basically the balance I have to always have in my mind is making it affordable, making it wash its face, and to make sure that we don't depend on too much support from like lottery grants and things like that. So we try to make sure that we cover our core costs enough that we can continue and that basically so that we've got enough money in the bank to say that if all our funding went tomorrow, we'd have a good year or year and a half to sort of like plan forward and keep us going for that time until we did source some more funding. So we live hand to mouth. That's what I call it, living hand to mouth, because I've seen loads of grassroots teams start up, but I've seen lots of them go by the wayside, and I've even seen youth clubs going by the wayside in all of that time as well. But we've been around now for 20 odd years, and I think it's not a model as such. I haven't created a model, like, but what I've done is I've made sure that we covered our costs continue.
Is there an element of it, I wouldn't say backslapping, or maybe a degree of it where, you know, you just survive another year, haven't we done well? But I know that's not what, you know, if you want to make positive change, you want to invest and the money's not there, or you want to improve this, you want to improve that, you know. And without getting into the detail of it, you talk about lottery funding and one thing and the other, it seems that quite a bit of the time, you know, it's token efforts from whether it be government or local authority or whatever, you know. And it must feel like banging your head against a brick wall sometimes.
I do feel like that, but I think I've been in it too long now to let anything like that dishearten me. So, for instance, like, schemes will come and schemes will go, and people will always need you to engage with the kids. So somewhere along the line, if, like, I've seen lots of people who've come in and got funding for the area, and like, I'm thinking, wow, you're massive, and you're sort of taken from what, you know, from the ground work, the sort of grassroots work and that. But at the same time, I can't complain, because on the other hand, when we do sort of like fit the criteria, and I suppose when it suits other people's needs, they do come to us. One of the things that's been quite good is getting that site on Tyburn. But it was an old grass pitch, although it was a well looked after and well maintained, because we maintained it ourselves as well, so we had all the equipment for it. But now we've got our own 3G Astro, and we got the funding from the Football Foundation to get the pitch sorted out. There were a couple of things that could only happen to us, you know what I mean, or happen to me in some ways, in terms of like a bit of a shortfall in the funding. So even now as we speak, like, even though we're running every week and we've got the new Astro, we've still got money to find for the likes of a classroom and the changing rooms. We've got the shell of the building, but we're still trying to get together now with the shortfall.
You talk about classrooms, educational facilities, and, you know, I wouldn't say grand visions, but just improving what you're doing. And, you know, we talk about partners coming into Liverpool, people coming into the city, and you've been presented with, and we can talk about it, a fairly unique opportunity from Nike, who I understand you've been talking to, who actually have looked at it and want to invest and want to help improve what you do. I mean, could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it was kind of shocking me, as you know, do you know what I mean? And Nike had come in and they'd done some research in the city about what was going on, because I believe like Nike didn't just want to come in, put their logo on Liverpool shirts and say, right, happy days, we've done our bit. They actually do want to get involved in the lifeblood of the city, and they actually want to improve the city and make an impact. So I think they've done some research. They've done about 6 months worth of research, from what I understand. And my name, or Kingsley's name, came up a few times, or quite a few times, apparently. And so they sort of like got in touch, made the connection through yourselves. And it was like, okay, let's have a talk. We can't say, it was funny because at first, like, they couldn't say who we were talking to, kind of thing, but that it was, you know, a sponsor and they were involved with Liverpool. So I was like, I'm always up for that anyway, to support and help and whatever else. So then the conversation shifted towards like, well, actually, we've come to speak to you, not just for research, but we want to get involved with the stuff that you do. So basically Nike said to me, look, you know, think about them things that you'd love to do, extras to what you already do, because we can see that what you already do makes an impact, but we want to help you to make even more of an impact. So think about the things that you feel are needed for the community and even for the wider community, if there's something that we can help you with. So I had, funny enough, I did have a few things that I wanted to look at. And obviously there were some things were involved with the running of our club, but there were other things as well. So we come up with a few things. One thing that we've been trying to get off the ground for a while now, since Nikita Paris used to play for us, was to get the girls teams going again for the area, because we've had girls dotted in and around the teams and in and out of the teams, but we felt like we've always wanted to get that girls team going again. So that was one of the things that Nike said, yeah, look, we'll help you with that. Put it to us. Let us know how it's going to work and where we can help you, and we'll support that.
So, I mean, there's two questions, really. I mean, one of them is, because just the way the nature of Liverpool is, first off, were you sceptical? And then secondly, you know, if you can just detail, how much you, what you think of it now, and what kind of, you talk about the girls' teams, like the level of support, it's not like a token effort or like a press release or anything like that. Is it like a genuine commitment to get things going?
Do you know what, mate? It was like I've always said this, is that I appreciate every little bit of help that we can get. I really do. But what I always try to do is not to raise my expectations, the expectations that of the kids and the parents and the community, because I'm never quite sure where these things can go. They start off as one thing and they end up as something else. So I always, like, when I speak to people, I say, look, okay, just let me know what's possible, what's not possible. Let's have a dead straight conversation and see what we can do. I'm not up for it, and I've never been up for, come in, let's get a few photos, let's shake hands, pat each other on the back and get off. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, believe me, I was skeptical when it came in, but I'm not gonna lie, I've always, when I vision starting this team off, I always wanted our kids to feel first rate, top of the, you know, I didn't want them to feel like second class in any way. And the big brand out there at the time and always in the area has been Nike. So it was like, wow, it's like, you know, if you say to yourself, oh, I've got a 10-year plan and I want this to happen. It's mad. It's just magnetic how it came to be Nike of all people. And yeah, I was skeptical, but to be fair, since the very first conversations were so straight and like I'd sort of like seen examples of what Nike have done in other communities, I knew, and from the guy that we were speaking to, I'm not sure whether I can mention his name, but he was like, he was straight up, mate, he was brilliant, and like I admire how he operates, like, do you know what I mean? And as I say, it takes a lot to kind of make me think, oh yeah. But yeah, I could tell straight from the off that he was for real. And that the biggest thing for me was that he wasn't going to promise something that he didn't deliver. So some things have come in as a bit of a surprise, but it's because he hasn't wanted to say and commit to anything that he couldn't deliver. So it's kind of worked. It's worked brilliant, but it's like there's a surprise every other day with it. You know what I mean? About things that are happening and things that aren't. So yeah, that's been a really positive thing, knowing this guy and being able to like trust in this guy if nothing else. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, how excited were the kids to be involved in the kid launch? I mean, that must have been, but we all kind of think we're all a little bit too cool for school and all that, and especially kids now, like 13, 14, 15. But like, that must have been, I like being able to tell these kids that actually you're going to get the best gear you get, but also you're going to be involved in the kit launch and actually see it. From what I've heard, they saw it before anyone else.
Oh, it was crazy, you know, it was crazy. Like, and I was trying not to get excited myself.
Because we're grown men, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. And even with it, I thought, it was like, it was like, I didn't even tell the kids. I was like, well, at first I couldn't tell the kids. So I had to kind of do a little bit of like, what I did was I sent all the pictures of all the teams. So it was like, because if they said to me, pick a few kids, there was no way in the earth that I was going to say, pick him. So I just sent all the pictures of the teams to the people that they sent to ask me to send them to. And they selected them. And then once they'd selected them, I kind of had to be a little bit cagey about what it was with them as well, because I wasn't actually allowed to say at that point either. So, but like on the day and stuff, and them days of filming were long days, but the kids were brilliant. They were right up for it. And the important thing for me in it all, to be fair, is that the kids had a great time. They grew out of it as well, because like it was an experience that they'd never been used to either. Do you know what I mean? And then obviously that night got what they wanted out of it, because the biggest disappointment for me would have been that if it wasn't what they wanted, because I'm always like, I get involved in a partnership and I always want to make sure that I play my part, that Kingsley plays their part, and that, you know, we've got a relationship going forward then, do you know what I mean? So it was proper exciting, and the kids have loved it. I've had messages off the kids, like, talking about it. And
see, we'll talk about the legacy stuff in a minute, because I know there's a bit of that going on, which is actually the bigger part of it. But, like, I mean, even, like, the gestures like that, I mean, the kid, I know you referenced it there, but, like, it must have been electric, do you know what I mean? For, like, for the, because they wouldn't normally be offered that. Or they wouldn't normally come across that opportunity, shall we say. And then to be taken seriously and stuff like that, it must have been like a bit of a head turner.
It was. And I still, if I'm being honest with you, I still don't think it's hit the kids yet, because I think it will hit them more when the stuff comes out in a few days and it starts becoming like billboard material and all that. I think it will really hit them then, do you know what I mean? And to be fair to the kids as well, I've admired the way the kids have took it in their stride as well, do you know what I mean? And as I say, mate, they were long days, but them kids kept showing the enthusiasm for it and stuff, and it has been great for them. And again, like, you just don't know what doors are going to open from this, you know, on a separate level. Because when I sent the pictures,
it puts like a nationwide focus on what you were doing and what all yous are doing, rather than, as I said, the top of the show for on a local level. I mean, I can say it, you're fairly well known, a lot of people know what you do, but, you know, you mentioned the Keys of Paris there, a lot of people won't know the backstory that Chesley came through. Through Kingsley. And you look where she is now. So, I mean, you know, away from even Nike, the folks this might give you, you must be made up with that.
Yeah. The focus will be great, and I believe like the support is going to be fantastic in that. But it's the unknown as well in some ways for me, because I don't know where it's going to go or what's going to happen as a result of it and stuff. But even if, like you say, the legacy stuff that we spoke about now, or that we're going to speak about, even if it does that, it will be a great achievement. You know what I mean? To get some of these projects off the ground. So,
but what are you expecting legacy wise? I mean, it's up at the girls' team to talk about funding, scholarships, anything like that. I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I can explain that. So one of the other things that I always struggle with is getting coaches. I kid you not, I think our club could be like twice the size it is now, but capacity is an issue for us. So being able to get enough coaches and stuff, and then when you look at the kids that do get involved with you in coaching, like we've got some parents who get involved, and they're in it for all the right reasons. Some of them don't want to be anything more than the coach for the team, but we get some kids involved who really want to carry on the coaching path, and being able to like get them into clubs to be coaching and stuff like that, which is one of the projects. One of the projects is like a coaching academy, to get the kids. So the kids will come and give back to us through coaching, and then we'll get them involved in like the level one, the level two, the level three, and as many levels as we can to get them into football. So instead of just creating players, we'll be creating coaches, managers, you know, hopefully they can go right up the football pyramid, you know what I mean? Can go into academies and then maybe get managing jobs at clubs and, you know, everything else in between, because a football club is massive. And if you get that experience, you can start off as a coach, but you can move into physio, you can move in loads of different areas. So that one of the things is this coaching academy that we've got, that we're going to set up again through Nike support. So it's the girls team, the coaching academy. One of the things that I think our parents struggle with as well is, you know, the summer holidays and the half terms. It's like it costs a bomb for parents to like get the kids, like to take the kids out and keep them occupied and stuff like that, but keep them somewhere where it's safe as well. Do you know what I mean? So one of the things that we said to Nike was, look, you know, we'd like to support families and make sure that they can get the kids with us doing a soccer camp, important part of the year, and try to do it for like as low cost as we can, if not free. So again, Nike have said, yeah, you know, we'll get involved and we'll support that initiative as well. And as young as I look, mate, I know I look young, but there's a time span on all of this, you know what I mean? And I've got a little daughter now, and you look, and I'm not saying I'm going to finish up anytime soon, but I'm looking towards the future now, and I'm looking not just in terms of football, but in terms of community work, because I do football, but I like to see myself as more than just football, because I like to see what we do as more than just football. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you look at our kids that have come through us now, who are like accountants, architects, doctors, teachers, you know, it's as much about making them people as much as it is about making footballers. So to that, I'm looking towards, I've always wanted to get a youth forum off the ground since the one that I was involved with. But recent events, again, it was Aubrey who said, look, we need to get another youth forum going, mate, because we need to look towards future leaders now, because we, you know, it's great what we're doing, but we need to get kids out there, and we need to get them outside of the football. We need to get them involved in community, because we're feeling like there's a loss in like sense of community and loss of someone like who you're going to pass the baton on to. So again, another thing that Nike were excited about was helping to find the leaders of tomorrow.
I mean, hopefully this can help be a catalyst for that, but I want to talk to bring it back a little bit and talk a little bit more about Kingsley, because I mean, I'll let you speak about this. The BAME community, which is, again, I mean, I get locally, if you listen to this and you're from Liverpool, you think, well, I know all this anyway, but you talk about culturally and talk stuff and community and stuff like that, and opportunities that maybe the kids won't normally get. I mean, can you talk to us a little bit about what you do around that, and where, you know, maybe what your aims and ambitions are for that? Because to me as an outsider, that's one of the things that stand out. When I first met you, I found out what you were doing. I mean, that stood out. I mean, I look at the Kingsley United badge that you've got on your top there. I mean, but do you want to talk us through the history around that?
Yeah, the badge is basically it's a wolf, because when we started off with Tiber, we were trying to think of what badge we had, what badge we could make for the club. So we come up, my brother came up with the thing, well, you're playing on Tiber, and then if you look at the story of the River Tiber with Romulus and Remus, the two babies, and you look at the wolf and stuff like that. Don't know if you know about that, but it was about that. So what our logo was as a Tiber FC was a black baby and a white baby and the wolf, and we sort of like called ourselves Tiber FC, and we the reason why we put the black baby and the white baby was because we wanted to share that multicultural side of our community, because again, like, our community is like so mixed. There's so many languages spoken in our community. There's such a mix. If you look at any of the Kingsley teams, you can see, you know, it's such a big community with so many different cultures and faiths and everything else. Then when we went our own way, we started off Tiber, there became an opportunity to get back involved with Stanley House. So we we had a conversation with them, and we said, look, we'll merge. Instead of competing, we'll merge together and we'll work together and stuff. And that was quite a big moment. And then what we did was, instead of like us calling ourselves Stanley Tiber or Tiber Stanley or anything like that, we ran a little competition with the kids, said, right, you name the club. Now, Stanley used to play on Granby Street School pitch, and we used to play on Tiber Street School pitch. Now, the road between us was called Kingsley Road, still is to this day. Kingsley Road's still there. And one of the kids came up with the idea that Kingsley Road was the road that divided us, but now it's the one that unites us. So together we called it Kingsley United. So to be fair to both clubs, we wanted to have something that kept our identities within the badge as well. So the handshake was, as you can see as well, again, that's a black hand and a white hand shaking hands, because that was the old Stanley House, because Stanley House have always been multicultural. It was, in the day, a youth club as well in the area, and the football team took off and what have you. So that's what the badge is. It's the wolf for Tiber and it's the handshake for Stanley House. Bringing it back to the kind of the legacy and the stuff that we do and the difference that we make is, like you said, we've got kids from every different background. We've even got kids that aren't from the area now that have wanted to get involved with the club, seeing what we do, like what we do, and sort of come in. So we've got some people from outside of the community as well. But as I say, we've done as much off the pitch as we've done on the pitch. Like, people only see probably me and them coaches, but them coaches aren't coaches. Them coaches are mentors, do you know what I mean? First and foremost, them coaches are mentors, because what they do is obviously with a clean heart and they advise and they do things that you just don't realise. And I don't know, I can't speak for other clubs, but, you know, these, in some respects, some of our coaches become, I don't want to sound cheesy in any way, but become that sort of like father figure or that role model for them kids in that team. Do you know what I mean? And if you look at any of our training sessions or you look at any of our WhatsApp groups and stuff, you can see there's a real sense of community, but there's also a sense of family as well. And it's not an odd occasion for our coaches to come and have to speak on behalf of a kid in some ways.
If we can be frank about this for a minute, that is an important issue though, is it? That's an important thing. I mean, Liverpool in general, like, never mind, but just kind of like the family. We go on for hours about the deprivation in the area and one thing and the other, but to have something to look to, whether you want to call it family or a beacon or something like that, I mean, that is a massive thing.
Yeah, and again, like we always, as you said at the start of the show, really, is like we kind of like we don't talk ourselves up. We more often than we just talk ourselves down. So we never really advertise what we do or anything like that, because we're just busy doing it. Do you know what I mean? And what I know from conversations I've had as a coach, Orbs has had as a coach, and all the other coaches have had, you know, writing letters for like school and things like that, and as in terms of like when a kid's going to go to a senior school and they get the school they don't want and all that kind of thing, letters go in. Again, if a kid's not doing his own work or misbehaving at home, that conversation goes to the coach and the coach has the word. And mate, I've sat kids out of teams before today because they're not doing what they should be doing in school and education, or not doing what they should be doing at home, and it's like they'll turn up, I'll have that conversation with the parents, the kid will turn up and I'll be like, okay, so do you know why you're not playing today? And they're like, what? No. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to tell you why you're not playing now. Bang. Or I'll give them, or depending on how the parent wants to work it, I'll say, okay, well, look, do you want to give them time to improve? And then and then say, if you don't improve, but then we'll drop you, whatever, whichever way it wants to go, whichever way the parent wants to go. I like to think that we support schools, we support parents, and obviously all of that means that we're supporting the kids. So that's the first and foremost, really, you know what I mean? The football is, I always say that, you know, the football is the tool to engage, and there's no better tool than football, mate. I started off this vision as a boxing club, but quickly seeing that football was the way to go, do you know what I mean?
No, brilliant. I can't wait to see what the next. Well, I mean, this is it's supposed to be a long. Well, it is a long term project. It's supposed to be across a multi year project between yourselves, Nike. I mean, just hearing your story anyway. Properly sat down over at Nike, because we spoke about it loads before, and we will be documenting this journey.
Yeah. And I think the club, Liverpool as well as Nike are going to get involved and do some stuff as well. We haven't really talked around that bit yet with Liverpool or whatever, but there are going to be conversations as well.
I'm just really looking forward to you and the kids, especially being able to tell the story to the nation and just seeing how it grows. And I don't say this lightly. I'm so proud of what you've done in the years up to this now and what you've continued to do. And not just yourself. I mean, there's...
Oh, mate, there's so many people behind the scenes, you know what I mean? And again, like, if it wasn't for the likes of Ricky Jones, our treasurer, if he wasn't our treasurer, mate, we wouldn't have had no... You know what I mean? Like, you'd have your worst conversations with Ricky, do you know what I mean? But it's all for the good of the club. He keeps me in check, you know what I mean? Because it's like, you've got to make sure
but
that...
But you need that, don't you? You need that, straight talking. I mean, I tried to hint at it earlier in the show. It's very easy thing, hearts and flowers and goodwill and arms round.
Yeah, then you just turn up on a Saturday play and that's it. No,
and
mate,
it's just magically there.
So much that goes into it, so much stuff that Ricky has to do that goes into it. Again, Aubrey on the playing side and that. And then, you know, the rest, you know, my sister is heavily involved because her lads used to play and she stayed on because she can see the worth of it and stuff. And so, you know, our Justine gets involved, is heavily involved. So it's like a core of people, but then, mate, the people that are involved, all the coaches, I appreciate everything they do because it's not easy and they've all got families and stuff. And to be fair, the family aspect of it only hit me when I had a daughter of my own, you know what I mean, like 3 years ago and stuff. And so I used to be able to do a lot because I didn't have massive commitments outside the school. So I'd go to school and then I'd come and do, you know, because I work in a school, obviously, Calderstones, and I'd come home from school and I'd just get back out there and do my stuff, do you know what I mean? But no, and having to do a bit more balance, and now it's for them parents, like, and we've got some really committed parents, you know, that do all the subs collecting and stuff. I could reel off like 30 names easy, do you know what I mean? So I'm always dead thingy, like, I am the person that everyone sees, but mate, there are so many people behind me that I just could not do it without and live without, you know what I mean? So yeah, I've got to say thank you to them people and the people that have been with us in the past and obviously for other commitments and other reasons couldn't continue, do you know what I mean? But it's 20 years, it's a community thing. There's a saying, isn't it, it takes a village to raise a child. It's like that's an old African proverb and stuff, and that's true. Really what I see as being like, it is, there's so many of us giving the role, you know what I mean? And it's brilliant. Just things like lifts, you know what I mean? There's not so many cars in the community and stuff like that. So just making sure kids get there, you know, on the WhatsApp group, can such and such picks up, can someone be picking such and such up and all that. It's like, it really is truly like...
Given without the expectation of getting something back.
Honestly. And as I say, like, I see so many clubs out there that say, oh yeah, it's all a family and stuff. But I truly believe since day one, it's always been that way with us, to the point where I've never really said, oh, it's a family, because it is. You don't turn around and say, oh, you're a family, because you know you are. Do you know what I mean?
Brilliant. That's been fantastic. You excited for the future?
Massively, massively excited. Bit nervous, if I'm being honest as well. Do you know what I mean? That because I really... I've got hopes, but I'm realistic as well, do you know what I mean? So, but what I know is that just Nike alone and the guy that we're dealing with Nike, and he just knowing, like, if it's possible, he's going to make it happen, do you know what I mean? And if it's not possible, look, it's not for want of trying. So he really is trying to. And I think the plan is to spread it throughout the city as well. Certainly some of the stuff that we're going to do is region-wide as well. So it starts with us. But again, I think he wants to have that. And I think Nike want to have that ripple effect as well. So I'm sure that there's bigger things for the whole city and region as well, mate, through this. It's not just get that Nike tick, that swoosh on the badge and go. It's like,
get your branding right, swoosh.
Yeah, swoosh, that's what I mean. I said tick. Well, look, if I was getting it right, I'd say the Nike swoosh. But you know, and I know, I'm a Scouser, and with Nike, like, mate, honest to God, years ago I used to raise money for children in need, you know, like when it used to come up every year. And I used to go to Jed the barber. I don't know if you ever know Jed from he used to be in Quiggins.
Yeah.
He used to do, like, he used to do all the things for me. So he'd done the teddy for me and you know, like the used to carve them into the back of my head when I had a bit more air, like. And but one of the things that I did get, and I did get sponsored, was the Nike swoosh as well. I kind of had that in my ear, and there was a time in Liverpool when that was the rage. Everyone used to get, yeah, you know what I mean. So yeah, the Nike swoosh, mate. And if Nike want to correct me, cool. But as I say, you know, and I know as Scousers, we say a Nike tiff.
That's not really in your 110s. Quiggins one for the dads there as well. Earl, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for coming in. That's been a cup of tea. Earl Jenkins, chairman of Kingsley United. Let's see where we go.
Yeah, nice one, mate. Thanks for having me. Sports Social Podcast Network.